Blog Talk Radio.
It's too young to be on that bridge. It's too young.
Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, a relationship healing expert helping men and women heal their bodies, their relationships, and their lives through love. Author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and director of HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com. Your body believes you and listens to every word you say and even your unspoken thoughts. Our body-mind is one unit, not operating separately as many of us tend to believe. How well do you pay attention to the messages provided by your body? Today, I have the privilege and honor of speaking with my mentor and teacher, whose gentle yet powerful work has created the foundation and basis for all of my counseling, coaching, writing, my relationships, and even the way I live my life. Allow me to introduce my mentor, Alana Rubenfeld. Welcome, dear Alana.
Well, that was very complimentary, Erica.
Well, you
that
deserve it.
That was really lovely. Lovely introduction. My goodness.
Well, you've done so much for so many people. So I would like to begin by asking you, what was your life process that led you to create such a comprehensive body-mind-somatic awareness method? Please share about your background, experiences, how you developed this elegant technique.
Well, firstly, I want to respond to that body. The tagline after Rubenfeld Synergy says, dynamic system of body, mind, emotions, and spirit. And last year I wrote, or 2 years ago, I wrote for the Journal of Somatic Journal. I co-wrote an article called Body, Mind is One Word. Now, if you look that up in the internet, there aren't many. When we looked it up, there was nothing on, there was a lot on body, on mind, and emotions, but there was nothing on body, mind. Now, it's happening, finally.
Right.
It symbolizes really the development of this work, because we are, in our culture, very Cartesian. He was a philosopher who believed, I think, therefore I am. And our philosophies have been based a great deal on the separation of mind, body, emotions, and spirit. And I trace back how I got to this. Is very interesting. In the 60s, I graduated the Juilliard School of Music, and I was one of the first women conductors. I lived in New York, and I ushered for Leonard Bernstein and the New York Philharmonic, and there wasn't a woman in the orchestra or any of the orchestras. Maybe Philadelphia had a flute player. And there was a big discussion in the newspapers, the guys and their locker room. I mean, you could have thought it was a sports event. How are we going to get a woman into the locker room? And living through this, and now it's 2011, we do listen to instrumentalists through a screen. A screen is held over, so we don't know if it's a man or a woman. And that's good for the instrumentalist. It's a step forward. It doesn't matter. But conducting, you can't do that. And I tried for 10 years, studied with Pablo Casals, was assistant conductor to Leopold Stokowski, and when he started the American Symphony Orchestra and all these things, credentials. But I had one problem. You guessed it. I was a woman. And the one man...
And something I'd like to share, a lot of young women nowadays don't realize what we had to go through years ago, especially
they don't.
What you're explaining.
They don't at all. And Marin Alsop is the first woman conductor of the Baltimore Philharmonic, and her Buffalo... her name slips me right now. Folletta is the other one. And here in Ashland, I've lived here for 10 years. I left New York. We tried to get a woman to conduct our Rogue Valley Symphony Orchestra, and we couldn't. So anyway, back to the 60s and the 70s. I tried for 10 years, but it was like knocking my head against the wall, and I also had aches and pain from conducting, and I didn't understand. So I started to be interested in the Alexander technique, which started in the 1800s in Tasmania. He was a Shakespeare actor. And the touch that they use in the Alexander technique is very gentle. It's really a touch to educate the person as to how are they aware that they're tensing up before they perform or before they speak. And he devised a system. It was brilliant, and many philosophers thought his most famous, for me, his most famous little book is Learning How to Stop. And he says, without being aware of what you're doing and learning how to stop it, you can't change this pattern. And he went through quite a few years, and I began to see Judith Leibowitz for Alexander lessons, and she would touch me very gently, and she would say the words, relax. And I would grit my teeth tight and say, I am relaxed. So I didn't even know how tight I was. And then emotional things came up. I began crying at sessions. And since she didn't do that, she sent me to a psychotherapist, a therapist that, or emotional processing person who paid attention to my stories, where they began. And so for many years, I went to her for my body, gentle body work, and I went to very fine therapy for my emotional well-being, my understanding and awareness of what was happening to me emotionally. And then I thought they belong together. If we change the body, we change how we feel about ourselves. One session she touched my knee, Erica, and I started crying and crying, and a memory came up, and this is what used to happen. She was not trained to process the emotions, so she kept working with the my awareness of my tense and how to eliminate it and how to be in a different habit, which is not easy to do. So I thought, gee, they do belong together. And I very slowly started to combine the touch, the shoulder, the leg, where the tense spots were, and let the person talk about it. And I took some psychology classes, and I learned to process the material that came out in the early years, in the 70s. And that took a while. And then I was very fortunate to meet Buckminster Fuller in the 70s at a very big conference. And he came into my workshop as I came to his. And his comment to me at the end of my workshop is, you are no longer integrating this work, this Alexander technique and emotional work, and you are synergizing them.
He gave you the word.
Yeah, he coined the word synergy. So he gave me this
book. No, but that's what
helps
you to put it all together for yourself, hearing the word.
Well, yes, yes. Yes, a good example is when you make cake, everybody, you know that you integrate milk and the eggs and the flour and you and the salt and the pepper or whatever and the baking soda, but it's still gooey and liquidy. Then you put it in heat. You put it in the oven and
right.
It comes out a different form, a cake, fluffy, moist, whatever it is, or a pie or a cake. That's synergy. You add an element so that the result is full of the components of the other, but the result is different. And this is what he said I was doing. And that, Erica, began, I was very fortunate to meet him, and I named my work Rubenfeld Synergy Method because of Buckminster Fuller and the word synergy. Well, now, 2011, even in 1990s, you had the synergy laundromat, you had synergy exercises, everything is synergy because...
You saw that word.
Yeah, I began to notice everywhere I went, 30 years later, the word synergy, synergy, synergy. So
that's funny.
It was very funny, but it was quite a thing. I had to hire a lawyer, which many creative people don't think about, to register. We didn't have the internet yet, unfortunately, and to register the name Rubenfeld Synergy Method and register my name, Alana Rubenfeld. People were stealing names. I mean, it was a riot. It was just a riot. And really the work... evolved as I learned to use my hands to listen to another story, two stories at the same time, what the person is saying to you, blah, 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 and what their body is saying to you. And sometimes they're together, and sometimes they're very different stories. And this all began because I was giving a simple Alexander lesson to someone, and she began to weep. And instead of talking about the weather, I asked her how old she felt. And she said, I feel, well, I'm like 2 years old. And I said, what happened when 2 years old? And she went into this whole story about her mother tying her fingers and her legs up with ribbons in the crib so she wouldn't touch herself. And she, her mother was very uptight about sexual business, your business, and the body business and the sex. And this woman didn't realize that after every lesson, she really looked beautiful. And she'd come back all hunched over, looking crippled. And then we'd go through a whole lesson. Now, this lesson, she told me the story about the crib, and she cried. And a few more lessons, we worked on forgiving the mother not knowing, blah, 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 all that. And she finally left and retained the changes that happened.
That's what's so amazing about this work. You're not just talking about the issues.
No. That's the big biggie. And the Alexander people at that time in the 70s, maybe they've changed now. I'm not in the loop there. They were very much against processing emotional material that came out from change of posture, change of use of the body. And then the same thing with Feldenkrais. I studied with Moshe, came from Israel, and I followed him for 10 years, and it was the same thing. Lots of exercises, movements, he used touch. It brought up all kinds of things, but he was against processing. He was. Now, I don't know, his graduates may be different. They may be combining emotional work, but I already knew that that had to happen. So my contribution for the next 40 years was combining the body together, body mind as one entity, and the emotions is part of that, and the spirit is part of that. And science now has shown that the molecules in the brain and the nerves and everything are all together, that the skin when we're in fetus, that the skin develops and has everything in it. And when it splits up and blah, blah, and a baby is made, it is everything together. It has the touch is the largest territory of the body. All our skin is covers our entire body. And people here where I moved in Ashland, the baby boomers, it's interesting your show is the baby boomers. Well, they're coming here in droves to Ashland, to Oregon, to retire. And it is a perfect place for health, looking at health and looking at where they hold their tension and recognizing it and going on a journey of changing that tension. That's the big thing. And Alexander, F.M. Alexander, showed in his work that that has to be done by developing very delicate, sensitive hands. And that's the title of my book, The Listening Hand, that Bantam put out. Yeah, and he's right. To change anything, you have to listen to the body. And you can't listen to the body if you're rough with it. There are methods that are very deep and are very rough. Maybe they do some people good. I don't know. I don't come from that school. I come from the school where it's very gentle and it's with clothes on. You don't have to take your clothes off. And you can feel, and it's energy. After all is said and done, it's energy.
Absolutely. And I wanted to add something when you were talking about the fetus.
Yeah.
And the memories that people have. Often they have memories from the first 2 years of life when they were not verbal yet. And the
Lubricable
Energy
Erica.
Method contacts that space because the person can't explain it, but their body is revealing it.
Yes, and the body retains everything. A baby went after, in utero it starts. They can hear. They can hear your voices. Tomatis was a big, he was in his 90s when he passed away, but he really was into chanting and Mozart. That's what he says you have to do when you're pregnant. The baby remembers music. Suzuki says that too. The Bach, you play Bach when you're pregnant. And,
well, it's vibration.
Exactly. The baby knows, recognizes the difference between the mother's voice, the father's voice, sibling voices, music, anything. And, of course, when the baby comes out, it's like a sponge. It takes in everything. The look, you give it a look, you're changing the diaper, you are either, you know, it's not so easy not to look disgusted with the smelly stuff that kids do, and they register that look. They don't know it's about their doo-doo. They think it's about them. Yep, they identify.
Wow, they internalize, especially if there are words added to that and an attitude, right?
They internalize everything, and that's why it's a big discussion today about environment versus the family versus school versus people going off to work and leaving their kids with people they don't know or staying. Oh, it's such a mishmash of beliefs. Anyway, that comes up. The body just registers everything. It just believes everything you do and registers. Later on, as you get older, you change. You know that you need, you can't say everything that's coming up. But
you may not even realize everything. It's not always coming.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very interesting that way back in the 80s, I was saying when we go into the 21st century, even in the 20th century, everything is interconnected between science and the arts, and research is showing that. And
absolutely.
Hard research is showing that we are all interconnected, and that's the way we have to be treated in that way. And this is a multimodal approach which is synergized, and its goal is to sustain any of the changes. It takes time. Moshe Feldenkrais used to have a wonderful answer for people who said, "How many sessions do I need to do?" And he'd say, "Well, how many years did it take you to get like this?" "Oh," the lady would say, "20. He said, "Well, then 20 sessions. That's a bargain. One session for every year. At least."
But if you don't really resolve issues from an entire year in one session, it can take
No. He was laughing, but
yeah.
He had to answer something.
Right.
But that's I believe that at a certain level everything is comparable. Everything is integrated on a level that it's in the future. It cuts to the heart of our somatic. Soma means body, and this approach is really to help our patients and our clients assimilate their past experiences through their body. And this is very important. And you can feel it in your hands. That's what the training is. I went up to the 15th training. Yes, and then I have assigned two of my senior people, Joe Weldon and Noel White, who became faculty. I assigned them to be the head. They have their own institute, Rubenfeld Synergy Institute, and they take on the training, starting with RST 16, Rubenfeld Synergy Method Training Program, number 16 and on. And they are, like yourself, they're thinking of all kinds of ways of using the computer to help people train in this work, the hands-on work. People, trainees, students still have to come to where they and the faculty are for hands-on, for touch. When we all discover how to transmit touch through the computer,
that's a little bit scary.
I don't know. I won't be here, but I don't know how that's possible. I certainly think information and reading and knowing the theory, a lot of theoretical, but the exercises and the touch, I try to do in the book, the exercise chapter, which is chapter 13. By the way, Erica, you can't write 13 chapters. They've got to be 12 or 14 for Bantam anyway. They don't like 13. So the 13th chapter.
But I did go into a building that had a 13th floor. It was the first time I ever saw that.
Yeah. A lot of elevators don't even have the 13th floor listed. It goes 12, 14, 15. It's very funny. It's very
funny. Super superstitions. But I want to ask you something before we run out of time and everything. You talk in your book about the seven steps of change. Like, what does it really take to change? And I don't think most people realize that it really is a process. and they're very afraid. So maybe you can go through what those steps are.
Sure. Throughout all the steps, the center part, the heart of it, is awareness. Throughout all the steps that you go through in life, if you're not aware of what you're doing, you cannot change. So change starts with being aware of how you are. Okay, so awareness runs through this. It is circular. It's not a line. It can go back and forth. So your first state of being is how being aware of how you are. How are you at this moment? Are you living with your old habits, your defense systems? You've got to become aware of all of this. That's the first step. What are you doing now? The second step is in life, what happens in life is an interruption of this, a challenge of this. A baby is born, you get married, someone dies, you move. These are all, you smoke, you stop smoking. These are all interruptions and challenges to how we live. And there are events that happen. Now you can go back and think that, well, I'll get through this heart attack and then I'll go back and eat the same way I ate before. Or, yes, a lot of people do. Or you can go on and be in a state of, oh, gosh, I don't know what to do. That I call the third state, chaos and confusion, when you really don't know what to do. I just had a heart attack. I know if I go back to eating all that fatty stuff and fast food, I'm going to get high cholesterol and I'm going to blah, 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 and all that stuff. So you go into this chaos and confusion and everything gets mixed up, which is very good.
People don't want to go through that stage. They think they shouldn't have to.
I know. And sometimes it happens quickly, and sometimes it's a long state. I'm talking about a few things happening at the same time, but we're zeroing on one thing. That's the third state. And you're absolutely right. People don't want to go through chaos and confusion, but they are going to do that, because if you don't do that, you can't reorder. If your old habit is a certain way of being, if you're not chaotic and confusion, then you go through that phase. Now, you could go back again to the status quo, to how you used to, or you can go forward to the fourth change that I named the fertile void. Not knowing, you feel stuck, you feel empty, but it's happening. Things are perking up, and you think nothing is happening. But the fertile void is very fertile, and I'm aware now that I do that. Before I write, I think I'm staring at this empty page, and I think nothing's going to happen. But once I start, I know I thought about it a lot, and all of it comes pouring out. Now, once you recognize this, this is with awareness, once you recognize this, you have to practice. You have to practice. That's when you go for help with a professional, and that's when you have friends and family. You have your own inner resources. Many people can do this they can practice without somebody else on their own.
And this is another stage that a lot of people don't want to have to do.
No, they don't want to practice the fifth step. Yeah, they avoid the practice. And it's the practice that finally makes them used to, if they say yes all the time, to saying no. If they say no all the time, to saying yes, to take in. You have to practice. You have to practice.
Absolutely.
Now, this next stage, six, is one of the most interesting and difficult ones. And it's called integration. When it becomes a part of you, you assimilate all the changes, you show new behavior to people, you are integrated. You're a different person. You're integrated. And that six becomes seven, which is your new state of being, which I have overlapping with one, because you if you stay in that new state of being, it becomes your way of life again. And you go through the whole process again, and it happens again and again and again. And all of this can't happen without some kind of awareness. In Europe, they call it consciousness. Here in America, we have the word awareness. They don't have that in Europe or South America. They don't have awareness. They call it consciousness. So this is fascinating, and it applies. I came to this because it applied to musicians, to psychotherapists, to business people, to workers. It doesn't matter what background you have. These are universal steps that you have to go if you want to change a situation.
And that's why people are sometimes very afraid of change, because it does require taking those steps and being uncomfortable.
Yes, being uncomfortable, taking responsibility for your part in it, and forgiving the other and yourself, and go on with life, and act differently. And this is right up your alley, relationships, for goodness sakes. We wonder why we keep picking the same person, and we know it doesn't work, but we're addicted. That's one way of saying it. Or we're in a trance,
or hypnotic. Or habitual. In a habitual brain pattern.
And we, we pick the same person over and over again. We learn those lessons. But until we learn to say, no, I'm not going after this kind of person, no matter how much I'm drawn to it, it's going to keep happening. Once we're aware.
Or I'm going to change my responses to other people, which may alter how they respond back.
Exactly. And this is the kind of work you do all the time. You know, you have couples, and they may say things. They're fascinating. It's very hard work, because you're touching, let's say, the wife. And she says to the husband, oh, everything's okay. You know, I don't know what you're getting so excited about. And inside, her body is tight. She's very angry. And she really wants to say, hey, I am really angry at you. And she's afraid.
But what
then
I have discovered,
her body.
Yeah, what I've discovered through the Rubenfeld work is that I will sometimes have the woman on the table, and the husband, I just have him holding her feet or her head, and the truth does come out. But it doesn't come out so angry very often, because beneath the anger is some sadness or the fear from childhood.
Yes.
And it really comes out, and it's beautiful when you see that happen.
Yes, it is beautiful, and it isn't the husband or the wife's fault for this.
No.
They go back to their original poor mother and father, and you do workshops, and you look at the mothers, and you say, well, thank goodness we have workshops. Your kids are going to all be attending these one of these days, because they're never going to do it right. It's never going to come out right. And so we just, you know, do that. But
so I would like to bring up another point from your book. And you talk about, right at this point is a good time, you talk about the art of self-care. And you're saying it in terms of who heals the healer, but even in terms of who heals you as an individual.
Talk
a little bit about self-care and the Rubenfeld method.
Yeah, well, one thing that I learned when I was training myself was that if I did work that I wasn't bodily fit to do, like deep work, touching deeply, I would get very soon my back would hurt, and I wouldn't be able to do that. So I learned I learned that if I listen to how I am with the person, they'll get the benefit of my being aware of how I'm touching them. Bottom line, it's called boundaries. How do you have boundaries with your clients, your family, you? Where do you stop and where the other one begins? You have to take care of yourself, because the baby boomers right now are faced with this dilemma of taking care of their parents, and their little kids are teenagers going to college. If you don't take care of yourself and you run around and take care of your parents and then you take care of your kids, both the father and mother are going to be extinguished. They're just not going to be able to go on. It demands that. It demands that you don't burn out. Yeah. I have a list here. On page 145, it's for, are you a member of the Helpers Club? Do you feel drained after meeting with certain types of people? Where are you in the care priority, first, middle, or last? Do you have Superwoman, which was my problem, complex? Are you
a
workaholic?
And there are Superman complex, too.
Yeah. Do you make lists of all the shoulds? Those lists. Do you
favorite statements from you used to be, stop shooting on yourself.
Oh, yeah, that is cute. Stop shooting on yourself. Yeah. And if you're a perfectionist, do you think that unless you've accomplished your task perfectly, it isn't worth much? Okay.
Right.
And I come from a musician's background, okay? Every social worker, psychologist, psychiatrist, sex therapist, me, I'm a founder of this work, and yet I come from a music background. And we practice a lot. We are nitpicking every little sound and note. And in a way, musicians are perfectionists. It's never good enough.
I had an experience in Connecticut with a Pilates teacher who was a piano teacher. And when she worked with me, it was fabulous because she watched every single nuance of my movement.
Yes.
And it was delightful.
Yes. Well, that's how the Alexander technique was for me. She just watched every little, your hands, every little change. Oh, that's it. What do you mean that's it? What are you talking about? Well, you just let go. I did.
Mm-hmm.
So teaching the person to recognize when they do finally let go, it's amazing. Just yesterday I was at a dress rehearsal with Jeffrey Beagle. He is a great pianist, a graduate of Juilliard like myself, and he was playing Liszt. We are celebrating Liszt's birthday, and he was playing Emerson, the one of the three, the very popular guy, very contemporary piece, a very difficult piece. So he's just learning how he couldn't understand when I said, you just let go. Okay? He said, how did you know? I just let go. And it's funny, and it's the same with these youngsters. I work a lot with the young ones, 14, 15, and 16. They come in with their violin. I'm not their violin teacher. And I say, play whatever you like, and they're playing a Chaconne or something, a piece by Bach. And I keep playing. It doesn't matter if you. I'm going to push you around. Of course, the parents are sitting there and watching. And I push them this way and that way, and they continue playing. And they're playing better. The sound is better. And I get them to do Tai Chi or any energy work while they're playing their instrument, because they usually think they're going to get a result by being stiff and tight and staying in one place. And one young lady, 15, she, in three sessions, she's improved tremendously, just tremendously. It's
well, if you
wonderful.
Watch, yeah, if you watch a famous, really well-known singer, you see their body movements. They're not stiff.
No,
they
no, they're
move
not.
All the way back and let their voice out.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Well, one second. There is a bell here. I guess I forgot to leave the door open for our interview. Okay, I'm in the middle of an interview. Okay, I shout. So she knows where I am here. That is so funny. But that's life. In
that
the
is life.
Interview. Yeah, a doorbell rings and someone.
I mean,
because I'm originally from New York, so I don't drive and have a car, so I have to make arrangements for some people to come and pick me up and take me far away. I live near the local downtown of my local town, Ashland, Oregon, but not the one with all the big hospitals and stuff like that.
So I have another question for you.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is it like for you to be less involved with your Rubenfeld Synergy students and the faculty mm-hmm. in the hands-on training of this wonderful method?
Yeah. Well, it was at first a very, very mixed feeling. I both missed it, but I knew that for it to go on, the founder shouldn't have to die for it to go on. And so I stepped aside, and I miss it, but I know that for this to go on, it's got to be in your hands. It's got to be literally in other people's hands for this work to go on, and that I need to have more of a personal life, and I'm back. I made a big circle. I'm back to music and theater and helping people with music and theater. And of course, we're the Oregon Shakespeare Festival is here. The Symphony Orchestra, I'm on the board and search committee, and the youth. All it's a small town, but boy, is it ever hopping! And I still am working on the archives and the legacy of our work. And I'm glad to see it go on. And I'm very happy, actually. I am quite, Erica, it's really fascinating. I'm out of the loop of some things, and that's okay. And other things, I have to be in the loop because they're over 40 years old. And, you know, the funds, we have to get people to know about our work and to let the fundraising happen more and more. But I'm not involved in that. And that's good. That's very good. You don't have the... I have a sign on my refrigerator. I'm no longer your mother.
So I don't want to leave this. It's we're running out of time. I could love to just
yes.
go on and on. But
I know.
I would like to give the listeners the website so that they can go there and the blog site. It's www.rubenfeldsynergy.com. And the blog
right.
is the same, www.rubenfeldsynergy.com/blog. And there you can have find a lot of information about Rubenfeld
yes.
Synergy and the training, or just how to get a session, how to find a practitioner.
Yes, and also, Erica, we are completing a DVD that has both a story of my life and about Rubenfeld Synergy, and that's going that took many, many years to edit, and that's going out very soon, and I hope parts of it will be on the YouTube and on the blog, and people will be interested in it.
That is wonderful. Alana, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Erica.
This was delightful.
Yes, same here. Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Oh, well. Bye for now. This is Dr. Erica Goodstone saying goodbye for now from HealthyBabyBoomersNetwork.com to get your free report at How to Live to 100 and Beyond, or schedule a coaching or counseling appointment at DrEricaWellness.com.